Welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 5th of June 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live tonight at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door and the Freemasonic victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, good evening, sir. How are you doing?
I've been stunned. I've been stunned at a couple of things. One, the treatment of Trump. And the other one, the over-the-top reaction of protecting the looters by the press.
It's both incredible.
Both in America and in England.
It's been absolutely incredible, isn't it? The way they are sucking up to them. They've been talking about it in Parliament, Dennis. The MPs have been saying Black Lives Matter in Parliament. Trump should have just crushed that outright straight away. But they haven't.
All these generals are turning on him.
Yeah, Mattis. Mattis is attacking him, isn't he?
I'm not another one.
There's been so many people have actually been killed in the riots as well, and they haven't made any noise about that at all. I'll tell you what has happened: that the British press have been covering up what happened during the British Black Lives Matter protest, where
I've seen some of them battles as well.
Did you see what they did to the cenotaph?
I'm not sure about that one. I saw them battling with the Metropolitan Police. I saw them attacking a woman, Australian reporter, got attacked with a guy shouting, Allahu Akbar. And then a camera crew got attacked. And only their security guy, they only had the one, at one point were fighting 15 of them.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw the Australian one. Yeah, the cenotaph, they desecrated it. They covered it in paint and graffiti and Black Lives Matter and ACAB and all sorts. Yeah, just totally vandalised it.
It's gone beyond an actual protest. This has been organised. And to be honest, did you see that when Trump raised the Bible?
I heard about it.
Yeah, what it was, it cleared all the people away from the White House so he could walk across to a church. When he got to the church, he raised the Bible, which, I mean, I'm no great lover of Trump, don't get me wrong, but he's all we've got. He's, to stop a communist world order. But when he walked across that street and raised the Bible, that told me everything. You know what I mean? That was a sign that this, communists, look at this.
Oh, the communist overtones is palpable, isn't it? I mean, it is just like a Bolshevik revolution again. It's what it seems like. Destruction of everything. They're tearing down statues. I mean, the cenotaph is a monument to all the war dead in World War One. It's just about the most sacred memorial there is in Britain. And they were just allowed to vandalise it. No arrests. Yeah, nobody stopped them.
It's crazy. It really is.
What
annoys me is that when the guy was killed, fair enough, we all know there's bad police. But what they were saying is that, these police are trained to do this. Yeah, they are trained to do it, but they're not just trained to do it on black people. He'd have done that on a white person.
Well, yeah, that's the point.
Differentiating.
That's the point. It's done to everyone. But you imagine, the way this is being covered up. A couple of years back, some young white lads put a banana on a statue of Nelson Mandela. And that was front page news, and they desecrated the statue of Mandela. Nothing about this cenotaph covered in paint, our most sacred memorial in the country. And they're just appeasing them, aren't they? They're just bending over backwards to please them.
What it feels like is... I mean, I hear this guy talking, and he believes that he'll do anything to stop Trump winning another 4 years. And after what I've seen this week, from the initial, killing and the outburst, after a couple of days, you could see this were organised, and Antifa have been mentioned again. Black Lives Matter is backed by Jewish money. So, you know, it's the same old, same old. But I think they're out to stop Trump from winning because they do want a communist world order.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it is trying to just that, and also the coronavirus and the crashing of the economy, yeah. And now race riots. They want Trump's presidency to go up in flames, don't they?
Collapse. Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, same with the coronavirus. Yeah, I mean, the stick he was getting over that was unreal. I actually saw the mayor of New York, for his name, the guy who was, you know, really took a good stand at 9/11. He got a lot of respect from the New Yorkers. And he's always backed Trump. And he was in an argument with Piers Morgan. And it was just a ridiculous argument coming from Piers.
Piers Morgan, he's been very double-faced. He's talking about how people shouldn't be going out on the streets and then totally changes his tune when it's Black Lives Matter. Oh, that's great.
Exactly. Well, yeah, he's a liberal, isn't he? You know what I mean? He does claim to be a liberal. So...
Well, they just say what they think people want to hear, but I think they're missing their target here with what they think people want to hear. I don't think people want to hear the police appeasing
looters. I think people will come out with all this.
Hopefully, it will wake a lot of people up. Anyway, we've gone a little bit off topic, haven't we, Dennis? We've got other things to talk about tonight, which I'm sure people will be pleased about because they're probably sick to death hearing about riots and looting and coronavirus. And we've got a totally different topic tonight that we've never talked about before, and that's germ warfare, bio warfare.
Yeah.
And in particular, was it used in Stalingrad? So what set you off on thinking about this subject, Dennis?
Well, this was an email I received from this wonderful lady in Spain who sends me material. She's a great researcher. She sends me material, and she actually sent an email saying, have you heard about the possibility of using germ warfare against the Germans at Stalingrad, which I hadn't. Anyway, she sent me an email, and I read through it, and I kind of Googled it as well. And apparently Mark Webber had done an article on it a couple of years back. So look further into it, and she says she just had a time yet, but she was going to go through some official British documents, which she thinks mentions the virus as well, or this germ warfare in Stalingrad. But she hadn't had time. So I'm waiting for that. But meanwhile, you know, it's certainly worth looking into because at that point, Stalin was absolutely desperate. And we know what Stalin gets like when he's desperate. It doesn't come down by anybody.
Well, there's lots of information about it. We've got the IHR article, which we're going to quote from here. But when you actually look into germ warfare and you look at the official Wikipedia page, it tells you that the USSR were involved in it, America were involved in it, Britain were involved in it, and very, very, there's a very inconspicuous country missing there during World War II, Germany. Germany was not involved in it. Germany was not doing research into biological warfare. And they don't mention it, but it just seemed quite obvious to me that you know, this country that we're told was so unimaginably evil that they gassed all these Jews, they weren't that evil that they did work on germ warfare for some reason. They obviously didn't want to use that.
The thing is the Soviet Union has actually used it previously, so they knew the benefits of it. They used it in the against the White Army in the Civil War, in the Russian Revolution. And Churchill and the Americans had got together, basically found some proof that they did bomb Iraq with chemical weapons, gas as well.
Well, also, I mean, before I was a nationalist, I can remember reading about gas and germ warfare, chemical warfare and all this. And I can remember reading that Hitler was gassed in the First World War. So he didn't want to use these weapons in the Second World War. He didn't want to use weapons that could poison people or leave them damaged like that for dying horrible deaths. So he didn't use gas, but he didn't use biological weapons either. He wasn't interested in using disease.
Whether he did or not, I did hear a story that when the Russians were coming, that they did do so. Well, I can't back this up whether it's true or not. But then once he saw this devastation of the land as well, then as a National Socialist, he refused to use it again. That's just a story I've heard, whether it's true or not, I don't know.
Well, if I would suggest that if there's any evidence that Hitler had used germ warfare, it would be all over Wikipedia.
They'd use it against him, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would be using it. They really would.
Yeah.
Because somebody that refuses to use germ warfare is not going to be somebody that's going to gas 6 million Jews, is he?
No, obviously, yeah.
And this is a point of morality there. So what we've got tonight, we've got this IHR article, and we've also got some other information, because there are quite a lot of coincidences with this that we discovered as we were going through it, which we'll get into as we go along. No regime made greater progress in biological warfare last century than did the Soviet Union. From a unique insider's perspective, a former high-level scientist in the Soviet biological warfare program tells the story in Biohazard, the chilling story of the largest covert biological weapons program in the world. Ken Alibek, born Kanatian Alibekov, joined the Soviet Biopreparat program in 1975, and was its first deputy chief from 1988 to 1992, when he defected to the United States. During the terrible Russian War of 1917 to 1921, in which the fledgling Soviet regime defeated the dispersed and divided anti-communist white forces, as many as 10 million people lost their lives. Most of these deaths came not in combat, but instead were caused by famine and disease, especially typhus. Conscious of this, the revolutionary Soviet government early on put a high priority on disease as a method of warfare. In 1928, it issued a secret decree ordering the development of typhus as a battlefield weapon. Now, I find this particularly interesting because typhus is one of the main problems that the Germans had at the end of the war in the Second World War. And there was a big problem with it in the First World War as well. It was really that a lot of the typhus deaths that got passed off as the dead from the gas chambers, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. But in 1942, there was an outbreak at Auschwitz, which they managed to contain, which is never mentioned.
It's a shame because they sort of try and cover this stuff up as well, because Zyklon B was used to get rid of the lice that spread it. And yet I was searching for that information today, and it's just, you can't find it anywhere.
You can't find it anymore, no. A lot's been cleaned up off the internet. Do you know 8 million videos have been taken down from YouTube?
That doesn't surprise me. 8 million, wow.
8 million.
That is quite unusual.
That's a boot burning.
Yeah, that really is. Well, I'm wondering whether this was being used before this program. If in 1928 they issued a decree to start developing it, and yet in 1921 most of the deaths came from typhus on the side of the enemy. I mean, that sort of implies that they had discovered a way of using it before then, and we're just not being told about it.
Surprise, surprise.
Well, let's have a look at typhus first then. The epidemic typhus is spread by body lice, scrub typhus is spread by harvest mites, and marine typhus is spread by fleas. So they're all spread by these parasites. Without treatment, death may occur in 10 to 60% of people with epidemic typhus, with people over age 60 having the highest risk of death. During World War II, many German POWs, after the loss at Stalingrad, died of typhus. Typhus epidemics killed those confined to prisoner of war camps, ghettos, and National Socialist concentration camps who were held in unhygienic conditions. Pictures of mass graves, including people who died from typhus, can be seen in footage shot at Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. Among thousands of prisoners in concentration camps, such as Theresienstadt and Bergen-Belsen, who died of typhus, were Anne Frank, aged 15, and her sister Margot, aged 19. Major epidemics in the post-war chaos of Europe were averted only by widespread use of the newly discovered DDT to kill the lice on millions of refugees and displaced persons.
That's the American antidote they had.
And that's what Wikipedia has to say about it. It doesn't mention cyanide, it doesn't mention Zyklon B, it just mentions DDT, which came about.
We know why.
Yeah, which came about at the end of the war. In actual fact, Zyklon B cyanide pesticide was used in chambers to fumigate clothes and bedding to exterminate the typhus-carrying lice. And prisoners in the work camps had their heads shaved to remove lice, and their clothing was replaced on entry to the camps in order to keep the typhus mites out of the camp. So the Zyklon B that we're told it was used to gas the Jews, in actual fact, it saved their lives. And this is what was used to get rid of these, to get rid of these mites. And so it's spread by harvest mites, fleas, and lice. And I guess harvest mites are probably similar to ticks, aren't they? Arachnids, I think they're called arachnids. They're all a similar type of insect, which this Zyklon B gets rid of.
You could see in one of the videos called in Auschwitz, where we point out the blue stain on the walls, which is caused by this Zyklon B. It seeps through the concrete, and it's still there to be seen today. And that's only used where the clothes and everything else were being there. The lice were being exterminated.
Well, they used it in America as well, didn't they? When people were emigrating into America from Eastern Europe in 1910, 1918, or before then, that sort of time, they were also using it then to fumigate their clothes. But I find it interesting here that it mentions after Stalingrad, there were a lot of people that died of typhus. So because when we get into the bit about Stalingrad, we'll see that it's actually another, a different disease that the Soviets used, but they may have spread typhus as well, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's, desperate times bring desperate measures.
Well, in the decades that followed the First World War, the USSR built and maintained a wide-ranging biological warfare program. For example, Alibek relates, Soviet scientists developed a sophisticated plague warfare capability and an arsenal in Kirov, now Vyatka, stored 20 tons of plague aerosol weaponry. Now, I'll just stop there, because we're hearing about how these diseases are spread by bugs, but what they had worked out was just get the actual disease itself, the bacteria, and make it into aerosols, and then they could spray it. Because people imagine, oh, there'd be an army of fleas or an army of lice that they would set free. Well, no, they would actually just spray it out there in an aerosol. But that seems to have caused a different type of disease, which we'll get into in a minute. While he was a graduate student at the Tomsk Medical Institute, 1973 to 75, Alibek studied Soviet wartime medical records that strongly suggested that the Red Army had used tularemia as a weapon against German troops outside Stalingrad in 1942. Tularemia is a highly infectious disease that produces debilitating headaches, nausea, and high fevers. If untreated, it can be lethal. It is also hard to extinguish, which makes it attractive to anyone trying to produce biological weapons. So this is tularemia. And as I was looking this up, I was looking up the biological weapons, and the first recorded instance of biological weapons being used was the Canaanite tribe, called the Hittites, used tularemia. They actually used this. Yeah, this was the first biological weapon, and it was Canaanites that used it. That's on Wikipedia. That's not some alternative information there. So interesting that's the one that the Soviets chose to use. The tularemia bacteria is typically spread by ticks, deer flies, or contact with infected animals. It may also be spread by drinking contaminated water or breathing in contaminated dust. It does not spread directly between people. The most common way the disease is spread is via arthropod vectors. Ticks involved include Ambyloma, Dermacentor, Haemophysalis, and Ixodes. Rodents, rabbits, and hares often serve as reservoir hosts. So normally people catch it from ticks, but what happened is that Alibek discovered that the first victims of tularemia were German panzer troops who fell ill in such large numbers during the late summer of 1942 that the National Socialist campaign in southern Russia ground to a temporary halt. In addition, he relates thousands of Russian soldiers and civilians living in the Volga region came down with the disease within a week of the initial German outbreak. Never before had there been such a widespread outbreak of the disease in Russia. Why had so many men first fallen sick with tularemia on the German side only? Furthermore, 70% of the Germans infected came down with a pneumonic form of the disease, which Alabek reports could only have been caused by purposeful dissemination. And the fact that this is a pneumonic form of the disease shows that the infection originally came from breathing it in rather than through the normal route of a tick bite, which would infect the blood and not the lungs. So this is how you can really tell that it wasn't from the ticks because of the form of it, which is incredibly rare. And it doesn't actually give examples of it when looking this up. It doesn't actually give any other examples of this pneumonic form of it happening apart from outside Stalingrad. Yeah. Whereas there were 10,000 cases of tularemia reported in the Soviet Union in 1941, in the year 1942, when the Battle of Stalingrad was at its height, the number of cases soared to more than 100,000. Then in 1943, the incidence of the disease returned to 10,000. The battle for Stalingrad raged from September 1942 until February 2nd, 1943, when Friedrich von Paulus, commander of the German 6th Army, surrendered along with 91,000 officers and men, of whom only 6,000 survived Soviet captivity. And I'll just stop there and just ask for you if you want to make any comments on that, Dennis, and what was happening in Stalingrad.
Yeah, the thing that strikes me just around about this time was Stalin got desperate. They made the counterattacking Moscow, pushed the Germans back, but that spring the Germans did an even bigger counterattack. So, and all the ground that the Soviets had gained, it were all swallowed up by this huge counterattack. This left them, I mean, this is the time when Stalin's son was captured as well. Around about the same time, right, this is when Stalin introduced that secret order 227, which was bringing the NKVD blocking units with machine guns behind the troops, saying that any unauthorized retreat would be met with machine gun fire. So he's now got to a point where desperation's kicked in, and this is all around this time. And now Hitler sees the chance now by cutting off all the links from Moscow to the Caucasus by taking Stalingrad, which becomes the new target. And like I said, you know, he's getting desperate, Stalin, and so now he's preventing the civilians from leaving because he thinks that with their presence there, it'll cause the defenders to fight harder. But as we found out, they did hold the Germans up. It makes me wonder now, you know, was this the reason?
Yeah, I'm thinking that maybe he used this his tularemia on them as well at the same time.
Well, I went into a forum while I was looking it up myself, and in this forum they were saying, like, yeah, but he wouldn't risk killing his own soldiers. What they weren't remembering was the numbers of soldiers that the Russians had was far outweighed the number of the Germans. So they had plenty of spare bodies to use if that were the case. And Stalin doesn't want to lose the Caucasus, and all the oil then goes to the Germans, because as you know, that's what really killed the German army off when the Battle of the Bulge later on, they ran out of oil when the tanks just broke down in the fight with the Americans. So Stalin knew the desperation of this situation.
Well, he also, I don't think he would have minded however many Russians it killed.
No.
As you point out, he's got the NKVD there with weapons pointed at the soldiers at the front, so that they don't retreat. He doesn't care how many Russians die, or how many starve. I don't think he's going to worry about there being some bounce back from this disease. I mean,
all the prisoners of war, which were captured when the Soviets went into the camps, and all the prisoners were celebrating. The prisoners were actually sent to the gulag. Because in Stalin's eyes, there were no prisoners of war; they were just traitors.
Well, and don't forget, normally there would just be 10,000 people in the year, And then during the Battle of Stalingrad, 100,000. 100,000.
Yeah.
And I guess what they're referring to here, that's 100,000 Russians, because they wouldn't have had access to the number of Germans that died from it, would they?
Because eventually it would have spread to the Russians.
That would just be the Russians. So it must have been a hell of a lot of Germans that fell ill with this. Well, Alibek became convinced that Soviet troops must have sprayed tularemia at the Germans. A sudden change in the direction of the wind or contaminated rodents passing through the lines had infected our soldiers, and the disease had then spread through the region. So it was like a bounce back, basically.
Yeah.
It also hit the Russians and caused them a lot of problems as well. So to his professor, a Soviet colonel named Aksyonenko, he explained that the evidence he had found suggests that the epidemic was caused intentionally. Aksyonenko responded with a stern warning. "Please, I want you to do me a favour and forget you ever said what you just said. I will forget it too. Never mention to anyone else what you have just told me." Some years later, an elderly Soviet lieutenant colonel who had worked during the war in the secret bacteriological weapons facility in Kirov told Alibek that a tularemia weapon had been developed there in 1941. It also left him with no doubt that the weapon had been used. This same officer further suggested that an outbreak of Q fever among German troops on leaving Crimea in 1943 was the result of another one of the Soviet biological warfare agents. Mm-hmm. And Q fever is another disease that's spread by ticks. And also... Yeah. Also Lyme's disease, which we'll get into in a minute. But, do you want to add anything to that, Dennis?
Well, the initial attack on Stalingrad was an air raid, which after that air raid had finished, there were 50,000 dead in Stalingrad. The German troops went in, and they actually did expect a quick victory. But instead, it just turned into a savage killing ground. But the Soviets were far outnumbered. So by September, the Germans had split the Soviet 62nd Army in two. And there was a vital hill there which changed hands eight times. Meanwhile, supplies from the US were being dropped for the Red Army. The planes were coming into Siberia and gave the Russians a chance for another counterstrike, which on the 19th of November... They started, and with the German allies, the Romanians and the Italians on the outside all collapsed, eventually leading to 300,000 troops being surrounded.
When do you think this tularemia was dropped on them then?
Well, I think it would have been early on for sure. But I can't be positive if they were dropping it throughout. But at the end of the day, the Germans were on a roll, and it did stop them. Some had stopped them, and when you think that nothing different to the Finnish army, the German army was a big difference. Makes you wonder.
Well, yeah, because I can remember reading that they had this really fast advance until they got to Stalingrad, and then they were held up, and they were just waiting around for some reason.
I'm trying to think where
I read that or heard that, but that might have been when this was happening, because they must have been really sick and also not knowing what the hell it was that had caused it. Because it would have just been from air that they had breathed in. This is the thing with these tick-borne diseases. It's very hard to work out what the actual disease is, because they're fairly rare. And they take a while to come on, and it's not like anything you've seen before. It's like this Lyme's disease. People are not used to recognizing the symptoms of it, and it looks like that could have had an origin in this bio warfare. So let's have a look at this Lyme's disease here. There is some speculation that ticks were being pursued as an agent of infection as part of biological warfare research. And this article tries to claim that there's nothing to actually prove that. And yet all these diseases, all this biological warfare that we're looking at is bacteria that's carried around by ticks. So they're definitely being pursued as an agent of infection, or the diseases that they carried were. Probably they were going to use these diseases by spraying them as aerosols, as I say, rather than emptying out a load of ticks over the top of the camp. But that was definitely where these diseases originated. Those raising this suspicion have noted the slightly peculiar nature of the Lyme disease bacteria and wondered if it could have been genetically engineered. The basis of such queries is the presence of gene duplications, deletions, mutations, and pseudogenes in the gram-negative spirochete, which are considered by some as unlikely to arise naturally. And these spirochete, I think they're similar to syphilis. They're like microscopic, nanoscopic worms, spirochete, that when a tick bites you, the longer it's on there, the what it does is it spews up the contents of its stomach to help digest the blood, and then it swallows it in again, and it's the contents of its stomach is these spirochete organisms which then get into your blood and cause all these horrific diseases. And so if that wasn't worse enough, it looks like what they did with this spirochete is messed around with it and genetically modified it. With gene duplications, deletions, mutations, and this, you know, this reminds me of what they're discovering with the coronavirus. It's got four HIV inserts, which shouldn't be there. So they've got things that they've inserted into it, and it looks like this Lyme's disease was the same thing. So the fact that we have this virus that doesn't, or this bacteria, this spirochete, which doesn't look like it was created naturally, that tends to show that this was a biological warfare tool that escaped from the army, which isn't that rare an occurrence. There's an island that's full of anthrax in Scotland that people can't.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, there's all sorts of places that have been ruined, basically
destroyed
by biological warfare tests that got out of hand. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have identified the disease as a potential bioterrorism agent, and the Borrelia genus has been a subject of biowar experimentation at least as far back as World War II, when the infamous Japanese Unit 731, which tortured and experimented on live prisoners, studied it. And that bit of information there comes from Renzi rather than from Wikipedia. And you know, you do read a lot about the Japanese doing tortures and experiments, and you wonder, well, is that entirely truthful? Because we know it wasn't truthful what they were saying about the Germans.
Well, yeah, I think that there was a lot made out of what they said about Japan and China. A lot of that was made up as well, but you know, you can't discount at this stage anyway if Japan did have the technology.
Well, were they involved in biowarfare, the Japanese?
Not that I know of, no.
Yeah, I don't think they were. Well, no, actually, they might have been mentioned in the biowarfare bit that was talking about America and Britain and the Soviets being involved in it, and Germany wasn't, because Renz, well, obviously.
The First World War was when, not the First World War, sorry, the war when the Soviets fought Japan the first time. It could have been then.
Well, it's an ideal bioweapon because it evades detection on routine tests, has an enormous range of different presentations, and can mimic everything from ADHD to multiple sclerosis to carpal tunnel syndrome to rheumatoid arthritis to chronic fatigue syndrome to lupus to schizophrenia. Enemy medical staff would never know what had hit them, nor even that one illness had hit their population, rather than an unexplained rise in dozens of known conditions. Well, I think one of the problems though with using this Lyme disease is that it might take a while before it affected you. It might take, because when people get bitten by a tick bite, you know, as far as I'm aware, it might be 6 months before they start getting the symptoms of the Lyme's disease.
Well, that's whether this is coincidence or not. If you remember, when the Germans were retreating, all the areas where the Germans had been Stalin had the NKVD round everybody up and ship them out to Siberia.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is with this disease, this Lyme's disease, I'm not so certain that it would have that much of a use to the military. Because what you want with a biological weapon is to hit an army with it and incapacitate them straight away.
What I meant though was that if he knew that people were contacting this disease, the quickest way to get rid of it would just shove them all in Siberia.
Ah, right. I don't know if you can infect people with it. See, this is the other thing. This is the other thing point that they make with this is like this tularemia. Somebody that's infected by tularemia, they can't spread it to other people. That's why it appeals to the military, because they can use it and they can knock out the army with it, but it can't spread to other people. The reason why it spread to the Russians by this is what their theory.
The rats.
Yeah, was by the rats, by the ticks going or the fleas going on the rats, and then the rats making their way into Stalingrad, or else a cloud of it. If they'd been spraying it from an airplane, if a cloud of it had floated on the wind into Stalingrad, that's the two suggestions. But I mean, I guess the military could use it as a way of what's the word for it? Not a time bomb, but a way of if your country gets taken over and you have to leave, it's like a booby trap. You could poison the people that took over, as it were. Like poisoning all the wells. Yeah. Scorched earth policy, that's what I'm thinking of. Scorched earth policy. You could make the land uninhabitable with something like this. Where the spread of Lyme's disease appears to be traced back to Plum Island, an animal research laboratory based off the coast near Connecticut. The disease appears to have escaped from there, either spread by birds or by a laboratory assistant accidentally becoming infected. Because there's no... there's no reports of this disease appearing before then. It really appeared in the 70s, and doctors have not really wanted to diagnose it, and they tried to say that it wasn't really a disease and these people were making it up for a long time. Mm. Now they're pretty hot on it. If you get bitten by a tick bite now, the chances are your doctor will force you to have a blood test because they don't want people to get this virus. But the fact that it could be man-made, and that's pretty horrific. We really shouldn't be messing around with these things.
No, it's playing with nature.
Well, genetic modification of things, they tell us, we're going to feed the world with genetically modified crops, and they make crops that can't breed, so you have to buy seeds. And they introduce poisons into you because it's been genetically modified with something else. It doesn't properly exist. And then they're genetically modifying viruses and bacteria and coming out with diseases that we've never had before, which just, from the few that we've talked about now, that it's very easy for them to get out of hand. It's very easy for them to escape and poison people.
Yeah.
And then this brings us on to coronavirus, and coronavirus also affects the lungs, like tularemia and Q fever, and has unexplained HIV inserts, like the unexplained inserts in the Lyme disease virus. Coronavirus also has no clear pathway as to how it achieved its gain of function, which is the ability to infect humans. It is 95% close to a bat virus. But how could it mutate from that to infecting humans with no trace of it before? And it would take centuries for that to happen naturally. And
not only that, it's been accused of being racist.
these are things that they can't argue against. You know, the mainstream media is telling us, like, this can't be a bioweapon. It's got to have come from a bat. And yet anybody that knows a little bit about viruses has said, well, two things. Where did it get the HIV inserts from? And number two, how did it get its gain of function? How did it get from being able to infect a bat to being able to infect a human? That would take centuries, and you would be able to see that in the way that it evolves. Because each time the virus evolves into and slightly changes, it leaves a like a path, a copy of itself, so that you can see how that happened, basically. And this just goes to being able to infect humans. There's no gradation process to get to that stage, which shows that it's unnatural. And we've even got the ex head of MI6 that is now pointing that out.
Yeah, well, very early on, I heard a scientist talking, and he was saying that of all his studies, he said that China bought the germ off the Americans and then weaponized it in China, but it was accidentally let out, either by somebody who would try to whistleblow it and was shot in this market square where the virus then got out. And it killed more white people than colours. But now they're saying that it's the colours where they're dying mostly of it. So now it is racist. But he also said that he felt that it was to be dropped in New York, not in China. And the reason for that was to break the American economy, to stop Trump from winning the election. And when you look at all what he was getting up to that point, it was kind of weathering all that. But suddenly when this guy was killed, George Floyd was killed, he ramped it all up again. And now he's under siege in the White House.
Well, I think it's more likely to have got out by mistake. Because the people that were working with these viruses expressed fears that the security wasn't good enough in the actual facility where they were studying these. And you're correct there. They did get coronavirus from America. They got samples of it from America to work on it. And Obama had actually given them lots of money. I mean, they've been given millions of dollars to actually work in that facility on these viruses. Why on earth you would give your competitors, your racial competitors, that sort of technology? I don't know. I mean, it's bad enough that America's got all these different viruses, but to give them to China, I mean, what are they going to do next? Give them to Africa? Give them to Pakistan? It's just this sharing of our technology with the other races. It's never done us any good. I don't think it does them any good either. They just breed more than they're capable of actually providing food for, and then they all flood into our countries to sponge off us and make use of the benefits that we've made. I really don't understand why we would share any technology with these peoples. We could just trade.
The only reason I can think is because they are looking ahead at a one world government, so these governments are all going to fall in line under one government. So maybe that's what they're thinking.
Well, that's it. And greed as well.
Always greed.
There was a time when you and your own people, whatever inventions that your nation made, the patents for that would come to you. Say you're living in India and you were British. There was a time when any new inventions that were invented in Britain, the patent would go to the other British people in India because it would be seen as owned by the British people, because it was technology that was built on all the work that had been done before by other British people. And then maybe you would, you would trade with other countries, but you wouldn't give them this sort of technology, because this was needed for an edge over these other countries.
Yeah,
you need to have a military superiority. You need to have technological superiority. So this idea of selling these things, because how can you say that you own them in the first place? Because how can one person say that they own something that they've created when they were only able to create that with the combined intelligence of all the people that came before them?
Yeah.
Starting right from the very first time that somebody first measured something and wrote down what the measurements were and studied it, and then the next generation came along and they dissected it, and then the next generation came along and they discovered a little bit more, until you get to today where we know what we know today. And then you get somebody that says, well, I've invented this and this is my invention, and everything, all the profits from it come to me, and I'm going to sell it to this other country over here. It's just not morally right, is it?
There's a lot not morally right these days.
Yeah, well, I was
and that's an example, yeah.
Well, I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, you could have trade with things that you create. You know, you could trade food and clothing and things like that with other nations, but to be selling technological advancements that would give you a military edge over these other nations, I mean, that's just treason against the people, really. Treason against all your ancestors that enabled you to create it.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what John Amory said about World War II. He said they were traitors to their ancestors, to Christianity, and their own people. And that's exactly what's been going on since World War II.
And what happened with nuclear weapons? How did Israel get hold of nuclear weapons? That was through stealing them, wasn't it?
Well, apparently they were passed on to them. Well, who knows?
Nobody's
ever been charged. I think Kennedy wanted to investigate, which didn't help his cause in his assassination.
I think there was a Jewish spy, wasn't there?
The Prime Minister actually resigned before Kennedy was assassinated. Kennedy wanted to inspect the place, and they had a big barony over it, and this Israeli Prime Minister resigned, and 6 weeks later Kennedy were dead.
Yeah, there was communist Jewish types that gave the technology for the atomic bomb to Israel, and then there was a guy called Vanunu who exposed it.
I think he's in solitary confinement still, isn't he?
Yeah, and Israel have locked him up in solitary confinement for exposing it. But then how did the Chinese get hold of it? And the Pakistanis, how did they get hold of it?
They said Stalin got hold of it when Truman was kind of hinting that they've got this new weapon. Stalin already had the details.
Well, I guess maybe he got them from German scientists that he managed to get at the end of the war.
There was also some executed in America, found guilty for passing the information on.
You would think that the most likely person that it is that's going to be passing information on to members of another nation is going to be people that either are from that other nation or are not from your nation and don't have that loyalty to your nation that you are going to have. So the idea of having Chinese people, say, in the FBI or Africans in the FBI or over here having Muslims in MI6 is just absolutely ludicrous, because you're bringing into the organization the people most likely, most likely to give your secrets away.
Trojan horse. These cities, what can't fall for ages under these sieges, somebody then just opens the door at night and they all swarm in. And that's exactly what's happened to Britain.
Well, even with the best of intentions, even if you've got someone that really sort of worships Britain and is a real Anglophile and they're working for MI6 and they've got these secrets and then they're tortured, they're going to give up the secrets, aren't they? Their loyalty isn't going to be the same loyalty as somebody who's from the same race, who sees it as their extended family and thinks, well, if I die, it doesn't matter because it at least it preserves all my people. It preserves the rest of my family. And they've got all my genes anyway, so my genes are going to live on into the future. And this is the scientific theory behind altruism and why people will lay their lives down for their country. Because instinctually, they know that even if they die, their genes are still going to live on because their genes are basically shared with the nation, with the extended family. So you have that loyalty there. Which
it's a different train of thought there, though, isn't it?
Well, it's a crazy...
dual citizen.
Yeah, well, it's a crazy train of thought, isn't it? So much of the world we live in today just goes totally against all intuition, instinct, or logic, all natural law. It's like everything's been turned on its head, and it's just set up to be the most chaotic and the most incompetent.
Interestingly enough, I found her only today, actually. I can't remember what she's called, but you know the Swedish girl who talks about the climate change?
Greta Thunberg.
That's the one, yeah. She's backed by all these left-wing activists and whatever. There's a girl, a 19-year-old girl in Germany, who is the opposite, who is speaking out against it and how it's you know, people aren't looking into it enough to see that it isn't the problem what they're saying it is. And the German government have warned her that if she puts any more videos up, she goes to prison.
And what is their reason for that? What is the reason they've given her for that?
I don't think they need one. It's the same with the Holocaust thing. It's, you know, people just swept off to prison, aren't they, for denying it. I suppose for denying the climate change. I can't believe it.
They're trying to make climate denial into a crime now. In Germany, they have made an imprisonable offence for 3 years for burning the flag of the EU. Literally, but burning the symbol of a financial group.
Just tells you which direction it's going. It's not good.
I tell you, Greta Thunberg, they've even brought her onto CNN to talk about the coronavirus, as if she's some kind of expert on viruses.
Yeah, I can believe that as well.
They bring on the people that really don't know what they're talking about in specialist subjects, and then everybody follows them. It's like Greta Thunberg saying, well, listen to the science, as if it's done and dusted thing. Well, it's not. Science is continually improving, and it's the way you look at things. It's like all this information, we can look at it logically, and we can work out whether it's truthful or not, but they don't want us to do that. They just want us to accept exactly what they say. This is why with this coronavirus, I've tried to look at all the studies and form my own opinion on it. And anybody can do that. E. Michael Jones talks about it. That's what Logos is. Everybody has Logos. You can look at these studies and you can form your own opinion from it, and you can see what's truthful and what's not.
Yeah,
you
don't, it's strange the videos that have been taken down on YouTube were exactly the same, the ones that are saying that it's not what it was, not what it is. So there's an agenda there somewhere, I feel.
Well, that's what I mean. They don't want you to make your own mind up from the information. They want you to just accept what they tell you. Have blind faith in what they tell you and don't ask questions.
Well, I find that very difficult sometimes, because when I know what they did at Bloomberg, and I've never admitted it, you know, I know what they're capable of and what they have done in the past, then very difficult to believe what they say anyway, somebody like me anyway, who's aware of what they are capable of. I mean, obviously a lot of people in this country take the government's word literally, which you would expect them to, but this is a different kind of world.
Well, it didn't always used to be like that. I mean, when I was at school, I would get better marks for coming out with my own ideas about things and looking at things and then coming out with my own ideas from it, which shows that you've understood what it is that you're studying, rather than just repeating what you've been told. But nowadays, it seems that they want people to just repeat what they're told. They don't want them to think for themselves.
Totally. Absolutely.
I guess that ties in with all the censorship. Well, we've got a few minutes to go here, Dennis. Finished with the bioweapons research talk, I guess. But
it is so interesting, isn't it? I mean,
What
more to World War II than we see, I think.
Well, as I say, there's a lot of coincidences there. But how are you getting on with your videos and Churchill's body count? I noticed that's still not up on BitChute. What's happening there?
No, well, I've completed the first part. There's a little piece that I want, which is on the other computer. Really, before I don't know whether to upload them up in parts like I've always done, or to wait till I've done them all. I'll upload them as I go along, I think.
Well, what you did before was upload them all in pieces and then put them together into one big film at the end, wasn't it? I would say that's probably the best idea.
Yeah, because obviously I want to start on this other one as well at some point about the Holy Roman Empire and Christianity, you know, that side of World War II, which I'm gathering information on it all the time. But like I said, I've also got this to complete, which is, like I said, the first one, which was the sinking of the Lusitania. I've completed that one.
Yeah, that was almost finished when you sent me the demo version of it. That was
there were some footage which really weren't, it was very poor quality, so I had to hunt around.
And what's happened with the... you said that there was a lady that has sent you a load of information, lots of information, and you, yeah, she was hoping you were going to make something?
The same lady who's, who sent all this information about this attack in Stalingrad, but she's also sent a lot of information on the Christian side of Germany and of Hitler, which, as I say, I'm gathering all together. I even found some trailers to a book which this guy had written about the Holy Roman Empire, explaining Hitler was building the Holy Roman Empire, but he was condemning the Holy Roman Empire. So it wasn't exactly a favourable video about Hitler, but it was telling the fact that he was building the Holy Roman Empire, which is what I've always said.
Well, it's a bit of a strange thing, really, isn't it? Because Hitler was criticising the church and the clericalism of the church, and yet at the same time, it was called the Third Reich, and he was carrying out the policies of the traditional Roman Catholic Church. But
a lot's been hidden. A lot's been hidden. Even the fact that he is Christian is hidden.
Well, we know that's hidden. We've done... Plenty of podcasts talking about that and exposing the truth about that. And the real shame about it is that there really aren't that many books that you can find that
that's the problem.
Talk about it. That what was so good about that last one that we did is that it was written before the war, so there was no axe to grind in it. There was no inserted bits about how many Jews he had killed or anything like that. It was just a balanced view of what was happening in Germany at the time with a lot of detail. But the problem is that book only went up to 1936. I'd like to hear what happened to the church for the next 6 or 7 years.
Well, actually, I've 2 years. I managed to get hold of a book about the Freemason infiltration of the church, which will shed a lot of light on that. It'll show the popes, which were against Freemasonry, which they were mainly, towards the 1950s, back end up to the 1950s, with the better popes than what were before, apparently. But I've just started looking into that one. So that there'll be some information there for sure.
What would be good would be to do a program on the good popes and go through them and find the ones that were really good and really hard on Freemasonry and the Talmud and usury, and give us some information on them to counteract the rainbow pope that we have now.
In fact, I'm just it's actually called the Grand Orient Freemasonry Undress, I think it is. Unmasked. Yeah, Grand Orient Freemasonry Unmasked. And it's a really interesting read. Tells you all about, the infiltration of Illuminism and the atheists, how the atheists kind of just took off during the Reformation, obviously with the aim of bringing down the Catholic Church.
Well, we need role models and we need heroic characters from the past, and we need to show people today that the church wasn't always the way that it is now. And, there were a lot of good people involved. So the more we can learn about that, the better, I think.
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. By the way, I think the list proof of Freemasonry is obviously a Jewish concept. But further than that, I'm just saying one of the popes, for instance, Pius the Eighth, this is 1829, and he actually said, lying is their rule, Satan is their God, and shameful deeds are their sacrifice. And there's numerous other quotes from the popes as well. So, a lot in here.
And that would have been the general view of the population as well. That wasn't minority view, and yet all of that's hidden today. Like we were saying last week, when you go back over the history of the Jews in Spain, you just get Jewish history books. You don't get any of the Christian records of what the Jews
were
doing.
It's all one-sided.
All one-sided. That's really all we're doing here, is just presenting the other side of the story so people can have a balanced view. Well, thank you very much for coming on today.